All right, so you're saying coaches, GMs, sorry, GMs, the belief system, bro.
Yeah, it's all about this belief system and getting not just the organization to buy in, but the city. I mean, the fans. And that's what it all comes down to. And I keep on thinking about over and over again about this team and how Sam Presti, how Coach D, and how everybody has built this belief system inside the players. And then what's so exciting for me is all these people that are starting to believe in the team right now. You know, like we're seeing this massive amount of people that are coming out of the woodworks that are like, hey, I really don't know this team very well. And I'm watching and trying to catch up about this team. And I love that, man. I love the fact that we're having this brand new fandom of other Oklahoma City Thunder fans that are coming and saying, we want to know more about this team.
Yeah.
Because it's the belief
everybody
in the organization.
So many national media sources.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, Sam Presti believes, and he's taught how, you know, the front office how to believe. And then he's taught the front office has in turn taught the coaching staff and the people that are around the players and training the players. And then those guys having this upbeat mentality and how they're going to train and work with the players have taught the players on how to have this professional habit of excitement about we're different. We're not going to be the normal young team. And that has turned into now this massive amount of fans that are coming out of the woodworks that are like, we believe this team can not only win tonight, but we think this team can go way further than anything else we've thought in the past.
Yeah, we don't want to get too carried away. Like,
but not necessarily this year.
When my kids were even asking me about it, like, what happens if they win? I'm like, I'm not thinking about what happens if they win. But you're right, dude. You're right. Down the line in the future. And this just like, just to reiterate what you're saying is like, it starts with the ownership believing in the president of basketball operations and general manager Sam Presti, and then him believing in the staff. And you said it last episode, but like his investment in the staff, right? Like not just poaching people. Like sometimes you'll see a coach be brought in to, you know, solve a problem.
But let's go back. One coach has been brought in to solve a problem. The rest of them have been developed inside of the coaching system in Oklahoma City. It wasn't about just the players and bringing them in as young players and developing the players. It was about bringing the coaches at a young age and developing the coaches to take over. Like, that was what's so next level to me. I mean, we can all talk about this or that, but the fact is when Sam Presti went out there and he got these guys, the coaches, and whether it was going to Alabama or Rutgers or, you know, wherever, Florida. I mean, all the assistant coaches, that some of them played for us. Cameron Woods, I think, played for us for a little while. But the point is that you have these guys that have come from all over. And Sam Presti has essentially targeted them and saying, I want you guys to help with my organization in the future. And these guys were all in their 20s when this happened.
So
it wasn't like these guys were like, you know, mid-30s and stuff like that. No, he got them young so he could help develop them into the men that he wanted to lead his team.
So I kind of have an answer I'm thinking of, but I'll let you go first. What do you think it is that Sam Presti is looking for in these young coaches that he says, I think that this guy can develop into being, you know, a top assistant or a top head coach in the league?
Leadership.
You know what I was thinking?
I mean,
dude, is the ability to communicate with young people eye to eye, face to face, and them listen, right? Because then a coach can go and learn
leadership.
A complicated subject and break it down. Yep. I think we were talking before we got on, and sometimes you're like, you said that sometimes you feel like a little silly about your analogies and like, yeah, sometimes they're very sexual and they are dirty. But some, like, a lot of times just being able to like explain something that's complicated to somebody in a non-complicated way and say, like, break it down into sections and say, like, this is how you improve the skills. Like, we don't like to talk about playing too much, but like we like to talk a little bit more about coaching. But if you think back to when you were playing and you had a coach that that broke down the post position for you and said, like, this is how you, you know, read the defender. If they're pushing on this shoulder, if they're low, if they're high, here's how you get them off balance. Here's how you use a shot fake. Like, they break it down into like really micro steps. And then they say from there, you can build out and you end up with very complicated moves. And that's what we see a lot with like the Thunder. They're always taking their stars and they're keeping them progressing with these, you know, simple drills that move them in the right direction where players can feel like if they trust their work, they're going to make progress. So I see a lot of similarities with like Sam Presti being like, you're someone who I can work with because the players respect you. And if they respect you, then there's no limit to how far we can take this.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily about It's about the communication. It's not necessarily about the skill level. You know, like as a coach, you could be what I would call a B grade coach, but you can pull the best out of every single one of those players, even though you're what I would consider a B grade coach. How? Well, it's because you have a way to communicate. You have a way to break it down. To me, I look back at all the coaches I ever had. There was two coaches that really stood out to me. I still don't remember his name, but he's the guy. He was the rebound coach for Charles Barkley's college team. And he helped me how to rebound. The second guy was Andrew Havens. He taught me how to have moves, especially in the post. He broke it down like you said. It was simple steps. You feel movement here. You feel pressure here. You do this. You do this. You do this. And it was all regimented, right? It worked, okay? And then you say, oh, why, how can you do that move? You know, and it's like, wow, he has like 45 moves. And is no, it's because you feel where the pressure's at, and you can utilize that pressure against them. And to me, it's exactly what Coach is doing, and Coach Bliss and Coach Cameron Woods. And I mean, the list can go down and down and down of all these guys that are in there helping these guys out. And it's like, you can see it in practice. You know, there's five or six coaches that are in a group of five players. You know, each one of them have this individual staff almost of saying, okay, you do this, you do this, you do this. It's a way of teaching. It's a way of communicating. I love it, man. And when you have a confidence with these players, you have a confidence with the GM, it shows to the fans, you know, and that's why we're just seeing all these people that are coming back. And it's like, yeah, we want to watch the Thunder again. We want to see what's going to happen here, because let's be real. Like when we're talking about it and you're going and you have to explain some of these players. I mean, if Vince Carter is saying that he has to explain some of these players to people that have been watching the NBA for the last, 20 years, he said. If he has to explain them, like who this player is, where he came from, that means that a lot of people don't understand these players. You know, so when we do an episode about Dort, or we do an episode about J-Dub and J-Will, like these are because we want other people to realize who we have and what we're special about these guys. Because a lot of guys just get stuck in the superstars. And yes, the superstars, you know, are the team of sorts, right? You can build a team around superstars any day you want. But it's the rest of the guys that create the body, you know, of a snake. You know, you got the head, right, with Coach D, you know, and then you got your midriff, you might want to say, with your superstar, and then you got your ass end that create the rest of the team, right? And I say the ass end with all due respect, because everybody knows that it's the dirty work from the rest of the team that makes the team, you know. And you can't have players like Kendrick Williams and Dort and, you know, the list goes on, J-Will, without saying, hey guys, if you want playing time, you got to give your all. Like if you come out of the game and you still have 20% left in your tank, you failed. You know, like that's what they're teaching these guys. It's powerful, man.
Yeah.
It's nothing like we've ever seen in coaching staff and in GMs and anything else like that. This is so next level. They're preparing these players for the future.
If you look over at the Suns coaching staff, like Monty Williams, former assistant coach, they've got two other former assistant coaches there. We've seen former assistant coaches all over the league with the Thunder, and most of the time they're still relatively young compared to the other assistants around them. So we can anticipate that the assistants on our coaching staff right now are going to actually end up as head coaches in the rest of the league. And this is, or at least top assistants on other teams' benches and stuff. And it's because, back to what you said, just this investment that we have in not just athletes, but also with the staff and making sure they're progressing. And it was like when it was time to shift to the younger team, it was time to shift to new voices in the locker room. And that's what Sam Presti did. And we believed that it was the right decision, but it was hard to see what he saw. But now I'm looking at it, I'm like, why did he see that? And I think it kind of just goes back to your little snake analogy again. Like that's a way to break it down and make it easy for people to understand and make it digestible for people who, this is a new concept to them. And so many elements of basketball, especially when you're dealing with advanced defenses, is you say, oh, here comes the double. How do you play out of this situation? How do you play at this situation? Then you break down that skill set that they're going to need, and you just keep repeating it, and you create different obstacle courses for the players to go through. And that's why you see Usman Jang make such a huge step in 1 year. And it's because he's working the program. Well, who's running that program?
Sure. Well, and again, Usman Jang is such a perfect example. I'm so glad you brought him up because we haven't talked about him a lot due to injury and him playing a lot in the G League this year. But Usman Jang is a perfect example. Sam Presti saw, first of all, a protection in the aspect of he traded to get that New York Knicks pick, right, Mark? And it's a you know known fact. He traded for that New York Knicks pick for one reason. That one reason was to protect his J-Dub pick because Knicks were trading out of that pick, and he was afraid a team was going to jump him and get J-Dub. That is why he picked Usman Jang ahead of J-Dub, so that if the Knicks trade fell apart, the Knicks were stuck with Usman Jang, not J-Dub. All right? Why is that important? Well, it's because Sam Presti, look, he could have picked up Kessler. I guarantee Kessler was on his radar. You know, I guarantee that there's some of these other guys that were on his radar that were in this draft. But why did he pick Usman Jang? He saw the potential in Usman Jang was far greater than anybody else left in the draft. What did Usman Jang need, though? The one thing that Sam Presti was willing to give him. Time.
Yeah.
You know, we want to say Usman Jang has the skill not to be in the NBA. You're right. He has the skill not to be in the NBA, but that's why it's so important that he played majority of the games in G League this year. I'm telling you guys, him playing in G League was the best thing for him. Hones in his craft, makes him a year older. Now he's coming back at, what, 19 years old this next year? Still one of the youngest players in the NBA, you know, and he's putting himself up in a really good position to be a standout player next year.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the guys that have really benefited from the G League system and now was able to go out and play in that elimination game and put up a huge stat line was Jay Will. 8-8-8 for Jay Will. That stat line reminds a lot of people of somebody. Bro, what do you think? Is that a Draymond Green stat line?
I mean, like, here's the thing. If Draymond Green had manners and Draymond Green knew how to play the game in a way that he wasn't trying to hurt somebody, then yeah, I would say this is comparable. But the reality is that what Jay Will does is much more beautiful and much more precise and much more toned in than Draymond. You know, like, as much as Draymond creates this amazing aspect to the game, he also takes away from it. His trash talking, his constant, you know, getting in players' faces, getting technicals, like what he gives, he takes. And I've very rarely seen a game where Jay Will has taken more than he's given. I think there was one game he shot like 1 for 6 or something like that from threes, and he only picked up 3 charges.
Well, this last game, you know, he shot 1 for 7, but he was able to hit the one that mattered, take a charge, play great defense, and like I said, 8-8-8.
Yeah, he's still doing things, man. To me, that's why it's important when players and people used to say going to the G League is an automatic, you're done for your career. I love what the Thunder have made it. It's like, no, you go to the G League to tone in your skills. Trey, man, go. Doesn't matter who you are, go. Why? Because if you're using the G League to help players out and help learn the same system that you're teaching up there just to get better in that system and to play against less, you know, competition to help you become more effective, how does that help you? It helps you because it's all about a mental aspect of it. If you know you can be successful doing it, right, you have a better chance of going into the NBA and being successful doing it. If you're questioning yourself because you've been shut down by some of the best defenders in the world, you know, you're not going to be out and be more effective. So the G League is incredibly important, especially when this team is coming out like they are. And there's going to be years, Mark, that we might not see our first round draft pick for a couple years. I'm serious, guys. We might get a top 10 pick. We might not even see that guy play in the game for 2 years. And then all of a sudden when he comes and plays in the game, he's fucking dominating. You know, like I've been saying this for so many years that the NBA is in dire need of a good farm system like the Major League Baseball has. They are in dire need of it because there's too many first round draft picks that are not making it. There's too many second round draft picks that are not making it. And now there's almost more chance that you make it as a second round draft pick than a first round or even an undrafted player. I guarantee if you put the undrafted and the second round picks together, it would almost come out to be almost equal to the amount of playing time the first round picks are getting. And to me, that's just telling me that people are going out of their ways to try to pick up what they consider talent to be better than other things. Future talent, right? Well, if you were willing to go bet on somebody with future talent, then do what we did with Usman Jang. bring him into the system, let him play out a year in G League, let him take his time, let him work through injuries, whatever it needs to do, and then bring him to the NBA when he's more ready. There shouldn't be these guys that were going out and saying, oh yeah, in 3 years, this player is going to be dominant. Well, guess what they're not going to do? Dominate the NBA, ever, if that's what you're saying. Because if they're not good enough to be in the NBA and you're drafting them saying in 3 years they're going to be, you know, good, that's a G League person. Send them to your G League until they are ready. And that's what the Thunder are starting to do that I get excited about.
So Jay Will had, you know, lots of stuff going for him. Those rebounds, fighting against Valanciunas, like his defensive effort, taking the charges. That would be the highlight to me, okay? Then you think about his scoring. He had a finger roll that people were comparing to Dr. J, maybe George Gervin. He had a hook shot that people were comparing to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, maybe Magic Johnson's imitation of Jabbar, right? Like, now, he only had 8 points, but he hit a three, so I'm guessing he hit a free throw also. Now, that's pretty eventful, 8 points. But I'm guessing that what really gets you excited about Jay Will's game is that passing.
Yeah, it's his vision. It's the idea that he has that vision. I don't want to say it's as good as Josh, just because I don't think there's any player in the league that is as good as Josh. But if you think about the way that he sees the court, I would definitely put him in the same category as Joker, as passing. And he's a fucking freshman, bro. He's a first-year rookie. Like, and I've already putting him in the elite passing category in the NBA as far as big men. I said this, and I'll say 100 times, is that if there was a redraft tomorrow, he would go in the lottery pick. He'd be a lottery pick. Without question. Like, this is not me just trying to be nice to him. This is me being real about him. He is one of those players. He is would have been a lottery pick if he stayed one more year in college. Because guarantee if he breaks the charge record, which he would have done this last year, and helped Arkansas to a Final Four probably, people would have seen what he's really capable of, and he would have been a lottery pick. And this is an unknown draft. This is a very questionable draft when it comes to, like, you know, 5 through, you know, 20. Mm-hmm. And that's why, to me, like, I look at somebody like Jay Will, and I'm like, you know, we scored with him. Not just that, but I this is one of those, like, things that if Chet never got injured, we don't see the impact that Jay Will would have had for another year. Because I think Jay Will and Usman Jang would have stayed in the G League the entire year. Never, I mean, maybe once in a while poking their head up for a game or two. But that's it. You know, like, I think that's what was the original goal. And I think the original goal was also J-Dub coming off the bench. I think J-Dub was going to be that sixth man of the future. But now I'm looking at this, and guys, everybody that's like, ooh, we should be starting Jay Will and Chet next to each other. No. Gotta stop thinking about another big body out there. There's one big body on this Oklahoma City Thunder team, and that's Chet. And that's Chet because he can guard 1 through 5. Okay? Second big guy that we're going to have out there is somebody that we've been watching him play multiple different players on defense, whether it's Kwai, it doesn't matter. And that would be J-Dub as playing that forward position of sorts. I mean, that is the way it's going to be. Then you got your small forward, right? Dort. And then you got your two guards, Giddy and people are like, whoa. Wait, listen, it's positionless basketball. I'm only putting forward guards and like that so people will understand. But the reality is that there's going to be no positions because it's all switching. It's all a zone defense. Like, it's a different NBA, guys. So we're not sitting here and saying, oh, yeah, this player and this player and this player. No. It's going to be the starting five, and J-Dub is going to be starting at the other quote-unquote forward position, even though he'll be a guard. Because he creates such a massive mismatch on when he's on offense to any forward that'll be playing him. And on defense, he can hold his own. I'm telling you, J-Dub with an extra 15 pounds next year, which he will have from working out, he'll be as big as most of the power forwards and small forwards in the league at 6'6", you know, 230, 215. Because he has that body frame that can hold that. Or 220, 250, 230, whatever.
I don't know, man. I think Jay Will is making a serious case to have to be considered as a starter, which means
so then who are you going to pull off the bench?
And you're talking about like six starters, and that's going to be up to Coach Daigneault to figure out. But I feel like if you could figure out a balance where you have like, say like, I don't know, like seven guys, say six or seven guys that started 50 games minimum each. Like, could you pull that off? Like, I know you could do it with six. Like, so
if you had a rotation that was all about, your rotation was all about teams that you're playing and everybody knew right. that, then yeah, you could pull off.
I think
seven
you might
starters.
Have to do that with a player as skilled as Jay Will, because
well, then I think then
you
this
want,
is what
like because remember when like Team USA 18 and under we saw Chet playing with Kenny Lofton Jr. You want Chet with someone like Jay Will. I really think so.
Yeah. I agree with you, but my point is that who are you going to put on the bench then? Dort doesn't belong on the bench.
He doesn't belong on the bench, and that's why I think maybe like you're saying, you match up, you put it in.
So okay,
it's a
all
new
right.
concept
let's just say,
where you don't have a set five.
So then let's just think this through. All right, so we've got six starters, in the course of a year, each of the starters, six starters, take a 10-game break, mm-hmm. right? So your goal is to 12 games. Your goal is to play 70 games in a year. Then that's 100% doable, bro.
Right.
Because then you're rotating who's taking off a day between, you know, six or seven guys. And in that case, then yes, then you could have a rotation of starters like that. And then at the end of the season, you hone down who you want to be as your starters.
Odds are somebody's
you know, like
be
in the fourth quarter
of that six. It's unlikely, even if you
but think about it. How many times are you going to have an entire healthy guys, your starting five going to be healthy all year round? It never happens. So like, think about it. If Dort went out this last year, you know, like he did this last year and went out for what, you know, 10 games and then Dort has to come back in and earn a spot again. I mean, that's just what's going to happen. Or whether it's J-Dub or Josh Giddey or whatever, you know, it's just this time period that they'll have to come back in the game.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
I'm sure there's guys that coach would be like, the second he's healthy, he's starting again. But then there's other guys that it's like, no, we want to take it slow with them.
Like, legitimately,
you know, Chet gets injured.
I'm concerned about not having Jay Will in the game. Like, I don't think Chet will automatically be better than Jay Will, because Chet can bring things like blocking shots, but Jay Will already draws charges. Chet can bring things like stretching the court with a three, but so can Jay Will. So I just feel like Jay Will has moved into the spot where we have to consider him as a potential someone who kind of like creates a starting lineup that's in flux. And that might actually be the best thing going forward, to kind of like let players, you know, have some nights off. I don't know if that's really what a guy like Lou Dort wants, but in the end, like him and J-Dub and so, you know, it's going to be interesting. So we could talk about this for a while and we should keep talking about it. Go ahead.
But just think about it. Every 10 games, it's what? 10. You're going to give every 10 games, you're going to give a player off a game, right? Every 8 games, you're going to give a player off.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. And if you keep that rotation off, you know, like, it doesn't look bad to do that, you know? I think, to me, I'm looking at it and people are like, why would Coach D only want to play guys 70 games? Well, because if you play guys 70 games in the course of, let's just say, 10 years,
yeah,
you're saving a guy 120 games, which is a season and a half in 10 years. Why is that, you know, why is that important? Well, when young players are getting to that 10-year and everybody's looking at them saying, well, that's 10 years, but they have a light 10 years. You know, that makes a big difference on the contract size that you get. And that 10-year contract is way bigger than anything else. And that's what's important, is that when you're looking at it and saying a 10-year career for a young guy and they're only, you know, playing 70 games a year, which is, you know, 120 games short of full amount for the course of 10 years, it's huge for these young players, bro. Huge.
Mm-hmm. All right. So there's something I heard, and I need to verify whether it's not it's true, before, but we can perpetuate the rumor at the very least for now. Josh Giddey is the youngest player in NBA history with a 30-point playoff game.
I think that's right. I think that...
How would we know for sure? We could just speculate.
Stat Muse.
All right, bro. You want to Stat Muse it or you want me to?
All right. Let's do
guys,
it. Guys. Stat Muse this shit. As we're live.
Irregardless of whether or not this is true, but it sounds right, but it could be wrong, right? But 30-point playoff game or postseason game, near triple-double. Like, if he had put up that final rebound, then I guess technically it would have been a triple double, but who cares? Like, this is an impressive feat for a player, but a player that's not necessarily known as a scorer too, right? There's been plenty of guys who are known as scorers who weren't able to do this at this young of an age, but to come in there and to look at for your shooting as a second option, right? The ability to get defenses off balance with your pass and then knock down shots when they leave you open, attack when the weak side's open, drive, get downhill, get your head down, using the array of shots that he used. It's pretty impressive, but it's also like there's a sense that it's just like the beginning. Like there's no sense that like Josh Giddey is – we've seen the best of Josh Giddey.
No, we haven't.
Not even close, right?
Not even close, no.
So I just feel like a triple-double or near triple-double 30-point game at 20 years old, why are people still sleeping on him?
Yeah, and I am looking at it right now, and Derrick Rose was scored 36 points against Boston, 20 years old, and 196 days. So I'm pretty sure Josh Giddey broke that record there. Also, when I was looking on this, it was kind of surprising. I'm just going to throw this out here, guys. There is another Oklahoma City, current Oklahoma City Thunder player on this, guys.
Who is it?
Mark, you want to give it a guess who it is?
Shea.
Lou Dort.
Lou Dort, really?
Against Houston, bro. He is one of the top 10 youngest players to ever score 30 points in a playoff game, guys. That's pretty impressive.
I mean, that it's damn impressive.
It was against Houston, just so you guys know.
Yeah, I think we remember that one now. But I forgot he was 20. That I mean, it's...
He was 21.
Oh, 21, okay. So...
Yeah, 21 in a few days.
Yeah, I mean, but you got some incredible things going on from Giddey. I mean, we can... plainly say we've never seen anything like it. But when you add in the fact that he's, like you said, he has the best vision in the NBA, like it's really hard to assess. I think a lot of times people are like, I don't know how to assess it. So then they just back away. But well, that's the fun part.
The only way to assess it, I'm glad you brought this up, because the best way of assessing Josh Giddey's vision of the court is when he's throwing the ball in bounds. I mean, it's as simple as can be, guys. Like when the game stops, right? And everybody is guarded on one-on-one, and you have an extra player that's playing defense. So there's pretty much a five-on-four situation. 9 out of 10 times, Josh is going to find the open man, even though he's not fucking open. How is that possible? How is it possible that Josh passes the ball so precisely that it goes like that close to fingertips? Multiple players' fingertips, not just one player's. Multiple fingers' players' tips. That close. How is that possible? It's because he recognizes where players are at. He has accurate passing, and he knows what to do to get them the ball, or where to lead them. I mean, think about that. If you're thinking about how to lead somebody into a pass, how to lead somebody into an open area, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's not too difficult. No, it is. I'm telling you right now, it is incredibly hard because you have to be in sync with that player. At any given time, you put Sam or Josh on an inbounds play in the game, right? It doesn't matter who it is. It's like he has this direct connect right to their brains that says, go back door. And they go back door. Or it goes, clear out to an open three, you know, and then wide open three. You know, like, how does he see it? It's because he knows where everybody's going. He connects to that player at that exact time that he needs to connect. And the vision is there. Every single time. That's how you tell Josh Giddey has the best vision in the league, because there's nobody else that does what he does on an inbounds play. And then you put him in an open court, it's easy for him, because if you can do an inbounds play, you can do it with anything.
Yeah, and his turnovers have stayed low, so that's so low. Keeping coach happy and, you know, maximizing our number of possessions. And he does use a lot of high risk passes that don't usually turn into turnovers, so it's damn impressive. But one thing that we've learned since covering Josh Giddey was about Australian rules football and the ability to pass into open space and lead players with a pass. That's something that we see happen all the time. And there's a lot that you can learn about Josh Giddey from learning about Australian rules football, from the physicality to just the style of playing in open space and leading people with a pass into open space. You see it all on display just over a much far condensed you know, 94-foot court. But that's what we're watching, bro. We're watching someone who's learned how to translate those skills into basketball.
Yeah, and it's just impressive. I still think our listeners, when we start talking about Josh Giddey, and, you know, I knew a little bit about Australian Football League. You know, I've seen it once in a while. Didn't know a lot about it, but I knew that it was, in essence, a lot like rugby. You know, similar balls and, you know, not similar fields, but like an open field mindset, you know?
Lots of tackling,
lots of physicality. But when we started talking about Josh Giddey, we had a lot of people who were like, hey, you guys got to go watch some AFL, some footy. And, you know, that's where Josh learned how to pass. That's where Josh learned how to take a hit like that, you know, and finish through contact. And it led us through an insane thing, man. And now, like, every single time that I think of Josh and I think of the first time that I got connected with, you know, AFL, I get excited, man. And that's why I have right behind me a, you know, a Cats jersey there, man.
There you go.
It's called a wool kilt or whatever the fuck it's called. I don't even know, guys. I'm trying. I really am. I'm really trying. But it's a wool, pretty fucking awesome. And it makes me happy because every single time I see it, I think of Josh Giddey. I think of what he's been able to accomplish in the NBA and utilizing footy and AFL as a stepping stool. And it makes me so excited because if I'm a coach, I'm, you know, going to Australia and I'm a scout, I'm going to Australia and I'm saying, I want to see the guys that play basketball and footy. I don't want to see anybody else. I want to see basketball and footy. I want to see those guys because it translates so well in the game.
Yeah. And I forget who said it though. One of our commenters mentioned that, you know, Jay Will's passing is starting to look a lot like Giddey's passing. And this idea that like these guys are teaching each other different skill sets that they've learned, you know, where they grew up. I think that's really interesting. I think it's totally relevant. And I think it's just the beginning because that's a really important part of this game. Now, dude, go ahead. I'll let you talk and then I'll change the subject.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, it really is. It's the new game. It's an important part of the new game. If you look at Jay Will, you look at Josh, you look at Shea, you know, you look at Dort, he's passing the ball incredibly well. You look at J-Dub, he knows how to pass the ball. He can get up 8 assists easy. You know, it doesn't matter who's coming off the bench. They can get up 4, 5, 6 assists really easy as well. It's this new vision of I'm unselfish. Like, how many times does Shea start the passing? Like, the other game, Shea would get the ball and you pass it to Jay Will. Jay Will would pass it out to the wing, or he would pass it to Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey would kick it back out to an open shot. It doesn't matter. Nobody cares who's getting the assist. Nobody's like, oh, fuck you, man. You should have taken that shot. You were wide open. Nobody's doing that. It's like, you know what? It's the system.
We've seen it.
The pass, 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 pass. Next, here we go.
Yeah. We've seen the other version, and it doesn't look good.
It doesn't. The ISO game, bro. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, people are always like, oh, this is destroying the game. No, the ISO game destroyed the game. That's what destroyed the game. When it was all 1-on-1 and who's can do this. No. When has basketball ever been an ISO game? It's a fucking team sport. Not a let's go out and see who can battle the hardest against each other. And then you got the refs. Like, everybody knows the refs were like completely horrible and cheating in the 90s. I mean, it's obvious that the NBA didn't want their star players and superstar players fouling out. And they made it very clear. They told all the refs not to call them on them. So my point is that, like, that's how corrupt that was. Now we're in a different time, different stage where we want team fucking basketball.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
So you mentioned J-Dub. I think that's a perfect point for us to jump into our final pregame prediction for tonight's game, 9:30 Sweet. Eastern against the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm thinking this is J-Dub's coming out party. I think J-Dub got his face broken first game he played Minnesota, first few minutes of the game. He was actually knocking down some shots and playing pretty decent, but I heard him say that was his welcome to the NBA moment, and I feel like he's about to lay one on the Timberwolves with a nice I'm here to play.
Fucking love that, bro. I love that you picked J-Dub. Because he needs a big game against them, and you know he's getting hyped. And so if he's getting hyped, I want to see him step up. because that shows to me that he knows how to step up in big games. We obviously know Josh Giddey's going to step up for the occasion. I don't think that he's going to necessarily score his 30 points that he did this last game. I do think it's going to be more condensed, but I do think that he will get close to another triple-double, if not a triple-double. But let's just be honest, guys. There's going to be one man that leads us, and that is him, the old great one, the one and only Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's on center stage, baby. He's going to dominate the game and put up a box score that's just going to impress everybody, because this is the last stamp that Shai is going to have before the votes are in. And first team NBA is still up for grabs. I can guarantee you that.
I'm hearing a lot of people select him for that. I think Anthony Edwards is going to come out and try to play a game that proves he's a better player. One of the things that scares me about the Wolves is the fact that they're capable of playing really well for a singular game. They're also capable of not playing great, but you know, coming into the Pelicans game, we had seen two sides of the Thunder in recent weeks, you know, and now we need our A game, and we need the Wolves to play some sort of B game. We can, that's, I mean,
well, we don't need them to play it. We need to push them to play it.
We need to force it.
We need to jam it down their throat so hard that they don't even know what the fuck's going on.
I feel like we can defend their best players, you know, with either length on the wings or, you know, creativity with Jay Will against Towns. I feel like they have trouble covering our best players. They're going to have to create some advantages for themselves in defense. I don't know that they're going to come out and try to play like the Pelicans, which is trap early, get the ball out of Shai's hands. But what do you think? How do you think the Timberwolves approach Shai?
Well, I think they're going to approach Shai by trying to use their girth to really kind of discourage him of sorts. But with that being said, I don't think there's anything to be said about that, because when you put a slower person on Shai, he goes around them. When you put a taller person on Shai, you know, he goes around them. When you double team him, he finds the open man. I mean, to me, like, I just keep on looking back, and I can't say this enough. I really do think that this is going to be a game that, as a team, we're going to come out and just really ramp things up. Really ramp things up. And whether it's three or four guys that score 20, or Jay Will, I'm telling you guys, Jay Will is going to be a huge difference factor in this. Even if he only plays 10, 15, 20 minutes, he's going to get a lot of charges. He's going to do a lot of great things. We got to keep an eye on these things, because these guys are really, they're putting out all out there. And every single time we talk about this, I always want to make sure that people recognize and understand this. This team needs to be enjoyed. All right, guys. This could be the last game. I'm not saying it's going to be the last game. I hope it's not the last game, but this could be our last game this season. You know, our natural instinct is to get upset with things that don't go our way. It just is, you know, but I want to encourage everybody that's going to be listening to this podcast and on live right now, like, look at this, guys, and watch the game and just enjoy what you're watching, because this could be your last game of basketball for, what, 5-6 months, whatever it is. Just enjoy it and absorb it and recognize that this team, that this organization has put out an incredible product for us. And yes, sometimes the things are going not our way and this and that, but we're watching good referees right now. Last game, how many times do we notice the refs? I didn't notice the refs once. Maybe once I noticed. I was like, ah, oh, that wasn't good. But they didn't impact the game. And that's what you need refs to have. You don't want refs to impact the game. And I think that's what's so great. We had a listener, Robert, that wanted us to talk about it. And I appreciate Robert so much. He's saying some great things on there, on comments. But it comes to this team. It comes to the way this team has always responded to referees. And I think because we're a playoff team now, there's a certain type of respect for us. And that game that we just played, if you disrespect the refs and you're a total asshole to the refs, the outcome is different.
Yeah.
And that's what's so impressive about this team and what we've been able to do is the respect level and the mutual respect on the refs, the players, the, you know, recognizing that they're all humans and we all make mistakes. That's it, man. Like, this is next level. This is why I get excited about this team. fucking respect, bro. It's lost so much in these days.
Yo, I mean, I know a lot of people feel like nothing to lose here for the Thunder. You know, the Wolves are reeling. Like, all the things are starting to line up. We really could push together and get this win and move into playing the Nuggets. I know that that's a possibility, but we have to recognize that there's just as a likely possibility.
All right.
We don't.
All right, I want to stop there. Think about this, guys. Has there ever been a time in the history of the game that there could be an upset at the 7-2, a 6-4? I'm sorry, 6-3, right? And if the Thunder get there, the Thunder are going to give the Denver Nuggets a run for their money. Wouldn't it be crazy if the top three teams get knocked out in the first round? I'm not saying it's going to happen. Don't get your hopes up, guys. But if there's ever going to be a year that the top three teams got knocked out of the playoffs in the first round, this is the year.
There you go, guys. We not only got ahead of ourselves, we got ahead of that even. But that's the fun part. So I'm excited about the game. We appreciate you guys